Paris Agreement actually mobilizes action in a number of ways. One of the ways that it mobilizes action is by letting people who are actually outside of government take more of a leadership role. This is something that we've been building up to for a number of years. Article 6 of the 1992 convention mandates public participation in both the design of policy and the implementation. But it's never really been put into effect by any of the parties to the convention. It's always been treated more like an opportunity to educate the public or to do job training on, you know, solar panel installation. And those things are needed, but that's not the actual intent of Article 6 of the 92 convention. The actual intent is that we have a kind of global participatory process everywhere where people in communities can anchor the policies that governments are putting into place. And so over the last few years, ever since the COP that happened in Doha, you have something called the Doha Work Program, which is for implementing Article 6. It's for mobilizing more robust and constructive public engagement to support greater policy ambition. The Citizens Climate Engagement Network was introduced publicly at the Minneapolis 2015 conference when we proposed a governance strategy. And over the next few weeks between then and Paris, that governance strategy went through a comment period. And then on December 2nd in Paris, on the third day of the COP21, we actually officially launched the Citizens Climate Engagement Network. It's amazing what these young leaders have been doing. I'm not going to go into all the details about it because we just don't have time to give everybody credit. But I can tell you that our global strategy interns are people who are actively making change in a huge way. And what they're doing is exactly what CCL wants everybody to do, which is to say, step outside your comfort zone, marshal your own abilities, and work with others in a collaborative way to make things happen that couldn't happen otherwise, but that should happen if our best intentions are to play out in the world. So why is the creation of the Citizens Climate Engagement Network related to the Paris Agreement and how it envisions climate action? Well, maybe the most important thing to know about the Paris Agreement is that it actually is made up of four different pillars, one of which is action platforms for implementation that are made up of any collaboration of people and institutions around the world who can show real and measurable effects to reduce the threat of climate change. We brought people together on December 7th in a high-level dialogue. So we had business leaders and we had subject area experts. We had people from representing oil companies and investment groups who came together in a meeting hosted by a group of citizen volunteers to figure out how do we make all of this happen faster. This is part of what the Paris Agreement is designed to do. Ultimately, going forward, the work of something like the Citizens Climate Engagement Network is going to be creating a space in communities all over the world where people can learn about policy, talk about policy, and start to get their views heard. Sometimes they'll be doing what we do in CCL. Sometimes they'll be starting new CCL groups. But other times, they'll actually be creating the first town hall type civic space that they've ever had in their communities. And we're fortunate that in the founding partners to the Citizens Climate Engagement Network, we have UNICEF, we have representation from the UN Environment Program, and we're working with a number of other non-governmental organizations to actually make this a reality around the world, to use the Paris Agreement as a platform to rapidly ramp up democratic participation in policymaking. Now, what is the Paris Agreement itself, right? The Paris Agreement was finally adopted on December 12th, a day after the conference was supposed to end. Emotions were very high. People were tremendously excited. The biggest thing to know about it is that for the first time since the 1992 convention, we actually have a global climate agreement where all nations have agreed to act together. Okay. In 1992, 93, 94, a lot of people in the United States said it doesn't seem fair that China and India are going to rapidly expand their pollution and we're going to have to reduce ours and no one is going to hold them to account. That's why there was this whole effort to create the Kyoto Protocol. Now, the Kyoto Protocol ended up not including all countries, and the United States ended up not being part of it. So we didn't have a universal climate agreement. The 92 Convention was agreed universally, but it didn't require universal action. The Paris Agreement is the first document in the history of the world that is agreed to by all parties to the Climate Convention that requires all parties to take action. So we have that now, that thing that so many conservatives in many countries around the world, especially in industrialized countries, have been demanding. We have it. It's a huge success for Paris. But the Paris Agreement is actually only one piece of the puzzle. The outcome from Paris is really four different things. The first thing is the Paris Agreement itself and the legal decisions that put the Paris Agreement into effect. Now, among those legal decisions, there is mention of carbon pricing as one of the key strategies for making change happen outside of government. What that means is that there's now a legal decision that took effect immediately on the 12th of December under the 1992 Convention. And in the United States, this is law in the sense that Article 6 of our own Constitution makes that ratified treaty the supreme law of the land. So a COP decision is in furtherance of our own national law. The decisions to adopt the Paris Agreement recommend carbon pricing as a strategy to mobilize climate action from outside of government. Why does that matter? It matters because for conservatives in the US who don't want a global regime controlling our economy, this new global agreement actually says one of the best ways to mobilize carbon, to mobilize climate action outside of government is not through a mandate, but through a market-driven system where people can actually have better economic incentives to make change happen. It's the economic efficiency strategy that we want. So pillar one is the agreement and the legal decisions. Pillar two are the national climate plans. These are called nationally determined contributions. These national climate plans are the second pillar of the Paris outcome. Over the next few years, every nation that's party to the Paris Agreement is going to have to mobilize ever more ambitious climate action. The agreement actually requires that your climate plan become more and more ambitious over time. And you go through a review every few years to make sure that you have the capabilities you need, to make sure that you're following through on your promises, to make sure that you're essentially following your own laws. These national plans will be implemented in a way that is legally binding within the laws of each country. Second, and the third pillar is finance. So the Paris Agreement doesn't say, okay, this country is going to get this amount of money on this day. What it does is it helps to set what the rules are for delivering that kind of funding. And it helps to define that we don't need to just wait for action only upon payment. We can actually say, if you're going to have finance oriented towards clean development or climate action, it has to follow real principles. It has to follow the principles that are laid out in Article 4, paragraph 13. You have to have policies that are coherent. They have to be transparent and accountable. You can have no double counting. You can't say you reduced emissions over here and then say it again over there when it was actually the same thing. You have to count it only once. If you allow another country to count it, what they call the international transfer of mitigation outcomes, this is how carbon pricing of the type that we would call cap and trade and offsets is enshrined in international law under the Kyoto Protocol, the Clean Development Mechanism, and now Article 6 of the Paris Agreement. If you have the international transfer of mitigation outcomes, both countries can't count them. Only one can. Right? So if you want part of your pledge to be covered by someone else, your domestic action has to increase in order for you to meet the burden of escalating ambition. Finance is now linked to these kind of principles. So the Paris Agreement has made the financing of climate action much more serious, much more convincing, much more effective. And what that means is we can now put more into it, whether it's from the private sector or from the public sector. The fourth pillar is action platforms for implementation. There are all kinds of action platforms. Some of them are collaborations among communities, municipalities. You have collaborations among big cities or among different kinds of corporations to try to reduce emissions in specific ways. You also have innovation-oriented collaborations that are part of these action platforms. And for us, I think one of the most important is the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition. Again, this is where Citizens Climate Lobby is at the table with oil companies, governments, and intergovernmental agencies, where we get to have, in the words of Rachel Kite, who was at the time Vice President of the World Bank and Special Envoy for Climate, presiding over the design meeting, we get to have equal voice with all of these partners in designing carbon pricing policies going forward.